All right. Welcome to the February 5th working group call for Aries. We have a really good schedule today. Lots of good topics. Please remember the Hyperledger Code of Conduct, the antitrust policy. Let's be nice to each other and avoid doing anything illegal, which would prevent the widespread adoption of our work here. That's the reason those are in place. If you'd add yourself to the attendees list, if you like. And is there anyone here that has not had a chance to introduce themselves on a call before? All right. Well, we're glad everyone's here. And we should have a great call today. Announcements. The Hyperledger Diversity, Civility, and Inclusivity Group has produced a survey. It is linked here. And I was asked to circulate it amongst involved Hyperledger people, participants in Hyperledger projects. That involves all of you. You don't need to be members of Hyperledger in an explicit sense to do this, but you're participating in a Hyperledger project with an open call. So that survey is there to help us understand and better solve issues of diversity, civility, and inclusivity. So that is there. Related calls, the DIDCOM working group is beginning to fill out sections of the spec based on our source material, and we have a number of volunteers doing that over the next 2 weeks. And that's proceeding well. The other thing that I'll mention is that we're not playing the issue game today, but if you're looking for, hang on a sec. If you're looking for issues, there's all of the ones marked DIDCOM have been closed here and linked to the new issue over in the DIDCOM working group repo, and they've got a link there to so that we can preserve history and move the discussions there. So that's been done. If you're wondering where all those went, that is where they went. And we'll likely have a few more that we have to do that with as well. But it's important that as a project, we get to move forward with the issues that are rather important ourselves. So there's involvement with that group to try and do the right thing and achieve interoperability going forward. But we also have problems we need to solve today. So there's going to be a little bit of a balance in the issues that we talk about. Those have been moved over. And then as necessary and as that group becomes ready, we'll be any further commentary will be moving over there as well. Any other, we didn't have an Aries working group A call this morning. This is the off week for that. That is every other week. And so that will be next week. Is there any other calls that folks would like to report on here in this one?
Sam, you've read this is Drummond. You've already heard a report on the did working group WCC did working group face-to-face meeting last week. If anyone else wants any details, we're happy to provide them, but don't need to saturate that.
Will you link here in the wiki, Drummond? Will you give us a link there? Drummond and Marcus did an SSI meetup a couple days ago, yesterday. I think, and that recording is posted, and they review the progress of that meeting, among other things, was to Jason LD or not to Jason LD, was topics there, and we don't want to go too deep into that, but that happened, and it appears that good things have come out of it, and if you're interested in those topics, then please go check up on that call. Other meetings.
One important note about the Any Contributors call on Monday, we were rotating between a morning call and an afternoon call. The afternoon call was mainly meant to coordinate with the Matter team. The Matter team has a conflict at that time, and so we won't be having the afternoon call anymore. So we're just going to do the morning call every other Monday.
Okay.
Okay, I got to ask, can we get the 30-second overview of to JSON LD or not? Is there an answer?
Yeah. You can get a 15-second overview. There will be an abstract data model and multiple representations of which Jason LD will be one. It will be a peer with any of the others. Jason and Seabor are the other two that will explicitly be included. There may be others, depending on what's brought. And all of them will be, you know, true to their own form. So we're going to have a pure JSON representation with no JSON LD, and then JSON LD with all JSON LD and Seabor that, you know, can be true Seabor. Does that answer your question?
Were there fisticuffs?
No, actually, it was the kind of thing you really needed a face-to-face to work through. But by the time came to agreement, it was, it was definitely a moment of elation when we got there without fisticuffs. A lot of conversations, but without fisticuffs.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that, Sam.
No, it was good. I'm glad this was a face-to-face meeting instead of a fist-to-face meeting. That's not the kind of meeting you really want. So, no, that's really good to hear. And I know there was lots of opinions there, and it sounds like the face-to-face time was well used discussing those issues. So that's fantastic. Other related meetings. Okay. Releases and work updates. What's the best way to go through this? I could go through it. I haven't done that in a call or two, go through all of them and kind of see what the quick updates is. But what's the most effective way for us to share work updates? I feel like that's a valuable piece of our meeting because that way people can be aware of progress happening in various areas. But I want it to be effective. Any comments on the most effective way to do this?
I think we covered it last week in the Aries A call, and I think it'll be waiting for another week.
Okay. Does anyone like to share some particular progress that their groups have made? Okay. We're grateful for your work and the progress being made. That is pretty great. On the agenda today, Daniel Hardman wisely suggested that we should modify our issue game and run a PR game. And can we merge this instead of can we close this? And that's what I'd like to attempt to do today. What I've done is I've ordered the PRs here by the least recently updated first. So the newer ones are at the bottom. The older ones are at the top, and that way it provides us some opportunities to walk through these and discuss them as we need. So the first one up at the top here is a change to modify return route to accepted. And there's been a handful of issues about modifications or fixes that actually need to be made to this, so that made it more of a complicated discussion. And so this was paused mid-December by Mr. Stephen Curran. Any comments on this? I have one meta that I'll make is that part of this is going to get absorbed into there's a link to the Arizona interoperability profile maybe, but there's also as the DIDCOM working group progresses over the diff, these topics will be coming up there as well. So I don't know the practical effect that has on any actions that we can take today, but are there any comments on this particular RFC? This particular PR to change the status of return route.
Why was it tagged with the paused label?
Steven?
I believe we discussed it, and I think we discussed it at the Connectathon, because I'm looking at the dates here, and the decision was that that it wasn't ready to be accepted, but it wasn't clear exactly what was needed. And so we wanted to not move it to accepted. I think that's all I can give you. Unfortunately, I've lost the ball on where we are. I believe we dropped it out of the AIP. So it didn't become, it didn't hang on that. And and just there wasn't the momentum to get it accepted because there was this feeling that it wasn't, there was things missing from it. That's all I can give you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I was one of the ones that expressed that dissonance, but in my comment, I said, I'm cool with having it accepted as long as we understand that accepted means we're trying to incubate it on a standards track, which is what we defined accepted to mean. So I'm not, I wouldn't say no. I'm in favor.
I believe the only change that was made here, there's a couple of line changes, but it's just the status and, of course, the appropriated index status.
Yeah, I mean, all I was trying to do, I try to keep status changes separated from everything else. So I kind of make changes first, get those merged, and then go to a, okay, we're going to change the status now. And so that this is literally just change the status. I'm happy to move it out if you think this could be covered by diff and we'll just cancel this one. I'm not sure what to do here.
Me neither. I'm not passionate that it has moved to accepted. I mean, I am in active use of this, but that doesn't change based on the status necessarily. And I don't know that I feel strongly about it, given that we do have a potential future destination for this in the DIDCOM stuff. Do we want to just kill this PR and not merge it, and then let that work play out in the other working group?
I mean, I'm fine with that.
How many other people besides you, Sam, would say that, you know, they're actively working with this the way that it's described in the RFC? If the number is pretty high, then I think accepted would be appropriate. But I'm okay with just pushing it out to DIDCOM's working group too, either way.
The toolbox is using it. And Akapai uses it. Ozma appears to have some support, but I have not got to the bottom of precisely how that's done yet. But I suspect that it is implemented the way that it needs to be. So that's at least three code bases.
I know the Lessee folks were using it in Germany, and I believe they were using it in combination between Akapai and .NET, Aries Framework .NET.
Well, and Troy Ronda has, we've got an open ticket that he added as well. Although
we have a subset of it.
So I sort of, based on your comment, Daniel, it sort of sounds like we should accept this status change.
Okay, that's fine.
Yep.
Anyone opposed to accepting the status change? Okay, we're going to accept that one. I'm not going to do it yet here because I want to keep talking on the call to see if we can make a little bit more progress here. So the next one up is 384. This is proposal for creating and governing terminology. This one was opened a bit ago and has a, if you look at the only comment here was by Stephen, and the files changed here. It opens up a conceptual RFC for terminology, and then has some discussion about existing glossaries and things of this nature to standardize these things. And then there's a handful of things in here. Daniel, I don't know if this was you that wrote it, and so he was crediting the author, or if he was highlighting some other thing there. And then it kind of describes various amounts of these things. And then there is there's a definition actor file. There's several files created. Actor is one of them, but actually has the beginnings of some definition work. And then that, I believe, is it. There hasn't been a lot of traffic on it, but it's one of our oldest ones. Any comments on this PR?
My feeling was that it is not clear what exactly is going on. So, I was hoping to go through and merge it, but I was not clear on exactly what's going on, hence my comment. And I definitely had the impression that it was a work in progress, and that's why I suggested they might want to put a block on it, because it's not clear to me what this is trying to do.
Okay. So it references the sovereign glossary. There's also an effort at the DIF for more broad term standardization. Drummond, I know you're aware of some of that. And so I wonder if this is the right place to actually have that discussion, or whether pointing to existing efforts might be better.
Let me just say a few words about this. Reeks and I talked at Rebooting Web of Trust in August on this topic, and we raised our hands and said, hey, we're holding a session, everybody come, and he and I were the only ones that showed up. So I don't know. I haven't read this carefully. I did open it up and read through it once, but I can't remember all of what I thought about it. But I did think more or less the same thing as Stephen, that this isn't quite ready for prime time, but it might include some ideas that are helpful. There's a difference between trying to do terminology where you want to tell the world about it and trying to say to everybody who's writing ARIES RFCs, this is the proper procedures for dealing with terminology issues inside the ARIES ecosystem. And so pointing to other terminology efforts is useful, but not necessarily what this one was trying to accomplish. I guess I feel like because the DCO thing isn't there, and because we don't feel like it's ready for prime time, I would close this PR and tell Reeks, please reopen it when it's when you feel like it's you're ready to advocate for it to be accepted. Well, as a proposal anyway. But maybe we could see if Reeks feels that way. Is he on the call? I'm guessing not.
I don't see him. I like your suggestion, Daniel, that we close it with a comment. And then I feel like letting it sit open isn't really helping anybody. If it's a short track to accepting, then we continue to leave it open and work with it. Otherwise, I think closing it with a reason and an encouragement to reopen it in the future, a new PR is the right track here. Does anyone disagree with that approach? Okay. There's two down. Here is the next one is 366. This is a proposal to change the status of the DID exchange from proposed to demonstrated. And there's some comments here that I think I can summarize as people being uncomfortable with this change given the status of it. Given that this is a status change only, it's not like there's a huge amount of work that went into this necessarily. George, do we have George today? I don't see George today. George is proposing this change because now we've actually have some demonstrations of it. But I think that it was assumed that the DID exchange protocol was further along than it really was. I feel like there's lots of things. In fact, one of our things on the agenda today is to talk about what needs to be fixed about the DID exchange protocol before we really feel like it's a serious candidate. Any thoughts on this particular status change PR? My inclination is that we close it pending the uncomfortableness and we continue to discuss DID exchange and get it to the point then where we can do this and then we can reopen a status change PR.
So I guess my comment is it shouldn't just be an unending story with this one. I mean, it has been implemented in at least one framework. And this has been, more than half a year, so.
It has been, and mostly because we just haven't made the necessary progress on this, right? But I also feel like this was sort of a holding ground for future ideas, and then it got implemented in its current state, but there's quite a list of things that we need to change about it. I've got most of them, I think, listed here. with the things that need to happen with it before we really feel like it's ready as a community, including key representations is just one of them. But so we're not saying that it should be unimplemented necessarily, but.
Or at all. My suggestion would be since we're talking about this on this call, let's leave this for another week or two and no harm, no foul. And let's just move on because we're going to be talking about exactly this in a few minutes.
Okay. I'm happy with that. Okay, I'm inclined to cut off the discussion there. There's some more, but they're most of these other ones get more quite new. And so they're still in the process of just being discussed as normal PRs. So if you're interested in these, please go take a look at them. But other than that, these are the ones that have really been hanging around for a long time. So let's. So we have resolution to two of them, and the other one we will let continue for our conversation today. Awesome. Thank you, Daniel, for the suggestion that we play the PR game and see if we can make some progress on those. I think it adds a lot of clarity when we can just briefly discuss things as a group and figure out if there's lingering issues. The thing I've got on the agenda was brought up was the protocol SEMBER. This was a discussion about what additional data in a protocol or changes need a version bump. Occurring to me about 30 seconds ago that I did not get a volunteer specifically to talk about this topic. Is there someone that's prepared to talk about this topic or that's willing to off the cuff begin the conversation that we need?
Well, we can pull up the document that's been written about it so that we can see what has already been formally said.
That's a great idea.
It's in the RFC 0003. There's a file called semver.md. It's linked in the main file. If you go down a ways, there's a more details kind of a section that says, go look at these other things. There we go. Ingredients. So the basic idea here is that we will follow the conventions that Semver recommends in the way that we version protocols. And what that means is that protocols can be updated with additional fields, and those are not considered breaking changes. When you add an extra field that didn't exist before, that's a minor change. When you subtract a field or when you make something required that wasn't required before or something, those are major changes and they require a change to the major number of the protocol. And there's more detail in there, but that's the general principle.
It mentions here that I noticed that you can announce the deprecation of fields, but not the actual removal of them, right? Because those are all minor considerations.
Yeah.
This one also thing, talks about, go ahead.
One thing that might be useful is that it actually is SEMVAR rules for message types rather than protocols, because we don't actually version the entire protocol. We version the messages within a protocol. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, Daniel.
Well, I don't think that's true. The message type URI is putting a message type on the protocol, not the version, not the message.
My thoughts are the same.
Wow, that's interesting that we didn't handle. So you're saying what we did on, that's not what we did in the 36.
That isn't, which is, I'm glad why we're talking about this. The idea is if you look at the way that the protocol type URIs are designed, this is probably on the previous page that I just linked from, then it talks about, we have a protocol name, Semver, and the message type name, and it's done this way on purpose so that you can see the similarity between them, right? The first comes the protocol name, and then there's the Semver of the protocol, and then there's the message within the Semver of the protocol. And so
interesting.
This would be a version on the protocol name, not on the type name. So adding stuff and going to the, I believe you went to a 1.1 is not
bad. So we need
bad, to add. But we would, what we would need is a copy of that RFC. You just copy the whole thing, get the new RFC number, and then you would up the version number for all of it and include the additional changes that you made.
Well, okay. Well. Wait. We just conflated a couple of things there. So when you add a field to a message, you are implicitly updating not just that message, but the whole protocol. Presumably that field communicates new information that the protocol could take advantage of in some way. So it's not wrong to update the protocol version when you just tweak one message of the protocol. But it is really a protocol change that's happening.
Okay. I didn't realize that. So that definitely needs to be taken into account. So that 0036 change is now larger in that it's got to change all of the message types. And we need to understand that or be consistent with that. We did discuss and agree to, if you look at 36, Sam.
36?
Yeah. 36 issue credentials.
Yes.
Yeah, features. So what we agreed to recently, look at, 36, there it is. Version change log is in there.
Is that lower or higher?
It was right at the top.
Right at the top. I missed it. There we go.
Yep. See the version change log? The intention was, instead of creating the entire new RFC for a minor change, we would keep a change log that says this is how it became 1.1.
So you're right. In that case, this RFC would stand as that change. But then rather than just 1.1, rather than just changing the version of the message, it would change the version of everything.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's certainly, I encourage that, because I didn't realize that you changed everything. It seems to me that we ought to have the version mentioned at the top of the protocol then, as opposed to just on the messages, so that that's very clear, but that's fine. I just didn't understand that. And I was helping to shepherd this through. So,
but I think we can accomplish that by changing this to 1.1.
I think issue credential protocol is the only one that does that. I don't think any other, I don't think any others do that. If you look back.
So you're saying we should, and we can get started on that, right?
Yes. So basically update all the RFCs to say 1.0 at the top. And then when we change it, we're changing it in all places, which is a tad painful, but that's fine.
Well, I thought what you were suggesting initially was that we only put the version in one place in the document, and we only have one place to update, and that it makes it impossible to then.
Well, that's true.
The wrong thing.
Is that what we want to do, and not have the in all the messages? So then if you go down to the message, it's not going to say the version in the message, which is probably fine.
It will prevent someone from making the mistake that I made here.
So I have a related thought. We don't actually have a designated place to stick the protocol name either. And so it sounds like we need some sort of header material that says the protocol name is this. I mean, it's called issue credential, but that's not actually what you put in the string, right? And if we have a place to say, here's the actual name of the protocol,
then
that would be helpful.
Sam, if you'll indulge me, will you go back to the protocol RFC for a minute? we've already done this, but it's just that people haven't been following the documentation. So I just want to show people where it already covers this. So in a protocol RFC number 3, it says these are the ingredients. If you search for a space that says ingredients, okay. So you'll notice that the first thing it says as an ingredient of a protocol is an official name, okay? And then an official version. Then the URI that uniquely identifies it and so forth. And there's links about this, but there is a template. If you go down a little bit lower than your cursor right now, the tic-tac-toe graphic is an example that's showing a template. But if right above that, okay, there, yeah, open that one. Okay, so this says these are the sections that need to go in an RFC. Under the tutorial part, you need to have a section called name and version. You need to have a section called roles. You need to have a section called state. And
why isn't this in the 000 template? Wouldn't it be a lot more useful there?
Not all RFCs are protocols, though. Now, we could have a 000 protocol.
Anyway, that's fine.
Right?
Yeah.
So
pretty much almost everything in feature is. Anyway, it's fine. But we definitely should make that change as well. This is going to be a massive change to the to get everything in line with this.
Well, I don't think that as many are out of line as you think, Stephen. There are definitely plenty that are, but there's also quite a few that do follow this convention. We just haven't been consistent.
So can you show in this one where is the message type mentioned? And does it only give like the very simple message type and not repeat the name and version?
So this talks about the template, but isn't actually the template itself.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
So this talks about sort of this is not a copy-paste template for this, right? Right, but yeah. It's saying this is what we should do. It sounds like we should make a copy-paste template.
Heck yeah.
It would make that easier to do.
And I don't know that is it really under tutorial? I always wonder about the name tutorial. I've never really understood that. I've assumed that came from other communities that use that term.
Yeah.
Like I never know what to put there.
Well, I always put like a verbal walkthrough of how things work, and then under reference I put but the tutorial is not exhaustive. The reference is exhaustive, but the tutorials, helps sort of tell the story, if you will.
Like to me, these are the facts, and these should not be under tutorial, per se. But
have
you
them be
got it split like, out. Yeah,
I like a reference in a tutorial, and you can almost put the tutorial second almost.
Anyway. Okay, so this is going to be a decent sized job at some point. I'll certainly take a look at ones I've got and see what it means. But the biggest thing is that 1.1 has to change, the 036, because but I think Keith's right. We've got to remove every message type, since we're going to be changing them all from DidSolv to HTTPS. The thing to do is actually remove everything except the message type name, so that the version, the protocol name and the version is only at the top and only in once. I think that's correct.
Where you say remove it, what do you mean? Remove it from where? From running text? Well, from JSON?
I mean, if you go
tables, from what?
Well, who knows? Ideally, you don't change it every time. So,
let's go look at 36 real quick.
Said, yeah, look at 36. I mean,
so there's it's good and it's bad. One of the problems with not putting it one place is that you end up with really bad examples it's an incomplete example.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't
That's
browse
the trade-off,
and talk
right?
at the same time.
I think you have it open in the other tab.
I don't. I think in those examples you could put the template language to say, maybe angle bracket protocol name, close bracket, to make it clear.
You can, but then you end up with a non, you can make it clear, but it still is a lot more effort to go in and make something happen. And maybe it's worth it just to avoid the confusion. Yeah. I love the idea that when you look at an example, and if, like right here, for example, is one exactly what you're talking about, right? Where you're sort of indicating that this is a template.
Right.
And maybe that's worth it. So that you could, for example, at the top, you could declare that this is the prefix, you know, the family inversion, and then you would include some angle brackets, family inversion, and then you would find that up at the top. And that way you could avoid having to declare it in multiple places.
Yep.
Yeah.
It makes the examples a little less useful because, you know, it's hard to see just a raw one like it's coming. But we can see. This should be a searchable thing when you're actually, you know, executing the document. You should be able to search for the at least this string and have it and find all cases of it and make sure it's consistent. So it's not impossible to do, but yes. Okay, so the short answer is that we need to get better about following this template, and that will help clarify some of the things that we're talking about and make them more clear in the RFCs describing protocols. Cool. Other topic, we sort of involved three different topics here. Other conversation that needs to happen specifically about the version change log, et cetera, here.
Well, I would like to suggest that one aspect of Semver semantics for protocols needs community debate and thinking. And that is, what happens if client A wants to talk version 1.3 and client B wants to talk version 1.2. If you look at can you go back to the Semver doc? Just real quick.
Not, you don't want the template though.
I want semver.md. It's in that same folder.
Where'd I go? I'm in the wrong place. You want the Semver from this one. This one.
Yeah.
Okay,
scroll to the bottom. There's a table here that shows what happens if Alice knows this version and Bob knows this version and Alice starts with such and such, what should Bob respond with? This is the aspect that I think it would be really good for the community members to go look at and see if they agree. I'm not sure that the answer here is the right answer, but I'll just say that it's subtle. There's some interesting subtleties to what happens when you degrade a version number in a protocol. And I don't think we can have a simple thing that says, well, if Alice is speaking 1.6, then Bob can know for sure that she could also support 1.0. And anyway, there's just some stuff to think about there. So that would be worth 10 minutes of ponder time to anybody who's interested.
Can I mention something now? So the discover features, the way that it's written, I think, is that if I support two versions of a protocol, then two entries, I believe, are going to be returned.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So if I, let's say I support 1.1 and 1.2, but I discover that the peer is only supports 1.1, then I would say that we have to make this decision. Either the client steps down to 1.1, or the peer, we make the statement that optional fields are ignored.
Well, so just to be clear, optional fields are ignored is already a statement that's made in several places in key RFCs. That's not controversial. As a matter of fact, it's a foundational requirement for decorators, because the whole concept of decorators is you can decorate things, and if people don't know what the decoration means, they can ignore it.
Okay. All right. Well, that is that written down somewhere?
It's written in the decorator's RFC, but it's not written in a couple of other places. And the fact that this is at least the fourth or fifth time on a community call that that question's been asked. So no matter where it's written, it's not written well enough in places that people are finding, because that's it should be impinged on all of our consciousness, and it's clearly not. So okay. We got to find a place. I'm not sure what's the most logical place to put it. Do we put it in the protocols RFC? Maybe we put it in the DIDCOM best practices RFC. It's already in the decorators one, but maybe there's some other place too.
Okay. The reason I'm confused is because I mentioned this topic last week, and I could have sworn that people said it's controversial. But
I think it's mostly controversial when it gets to an implementation stage, and it depends on how you run your schemas. And some schemas really don't like when they parse a message and there's extra data in there. Some of them default to getting angry instead of allowing them to happen. So if I have a schema that declares a message type and there's a totally unexpected field in there, lots of schema based JSON parsing engines will vomit intentionally. But
if we're making the statement that optional ones are allowed, then those are non-compliant with ARIES.
That's correct. Okay. So
that's correct. And if they are doing that, then they got to be corrected. That's what we're going to be looking at is how well we're doing that in Akamai. But the principle is what Daniel said, which is you got to accept them and you got to move forward. Just ignore them.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you.
I think probably protocols, Daniel, is in the message definitions when we talk about it. I think that's a spot where we could use a hey, right? If you receive a message, then you need to ignore fields you don't understand or you're not expecting.
Okay.
The other comment I have about this table, Daniel, is that I like the fact in the way that the feature discover features protocol is written. I like it that you include two different lines if you support two different versions. And that I think makes it really, really clear. And you could also pretty easily figure out, which one you actually want to use between the two. I think if we tend to rely on too many nuances of support, then we're going to get ourselves into trouble in a hurry. And maybe we'll need that level of complexity, but I hope we can at least initially avoid that. If I support 1.1, 1.2, and 1.3, then I can just say that. And that might be a little bit redundant in discover features, but it makes it really easy to detect. And if I'm talking with another agent that only supports one of those versions, it can simply see if its supported version is present or not. And that's a really easy way to sort of figure that out. And if they're not speaking compatible version, then they just don't. Now that means that from a best practice perspective, let's say Akamai has a protocol at 1.1. And they're adding support for 1.2, it is wise to include, as long as they can still support 1.1, it is wise to include both of those entries, at least for a while, in that list. And that way, we're sort of promoting the right behavior and we make it easy to do that matching behavior. So I appreciate you bringing this up, Daniel, and all of the writing that you've done on this that we all ought to be reading apparently more often than we are. And I think that would be really helpful. As an action item, we talked about creating a template possibly from the template described in protocols. I would love to have a 00001 that we can just copy and paste from. I think that would be really valuable. Does anyone want to volunteer to do that?
I can do it later, but I'm not ready. I have too much on my plate right now to do. I'm glad to do it later, but if anyone can do it in a more timely fashion, but otherwise I'll put it on my list to try to get to.
Thank you, Stephen. And if someone wants to volunteer, please volunteer. Let us know. This would be an easy thing to do, and would be helpful to the community. If you're looking for ways to contribute and you don't know where, this is a good one. Okay. Have we sufficiently talked about the Semver topic today? Have we accomplished our goal? Okay, I'm hearing crickets. The next issue that I wanted to bring up is a fairly subtle one, and I'm going to try and give some background for the You Are Here purpose. In DID documents, we have a service block that has the endpoint URI, and it has keys associated with that endpoint. And this allows a single DID to have multiple, endpoints or agents and keys involved in how they're actually communicated. There's one particular edge case that I've been working with, and this is for agents without an endpoint. Edge agents often don't, and there are two edge agents that I've been working with. One is the Aries Toolbox. It's a piece of desktop software and does not natively have a public URI that you can use to talk into it. And another one is, of course, a mobile app, right? You don't have a way to reach directly into mobile apps without using some technique or some external system to make that happen. And so I raised issue 405 to talk about this. I raised this because it didn't come up on the call and I didn't want to wait until we actually had time on the call. But what I talked about was, what do we actually do if we want to exchange a DID document and we have an agent that doesn't have an endpoint? I will mention that the context of this is fairly narrow. We've talked before about how the route coordination protocol doesn't actually need, is not an issue if both your edge agent and its mediator are from the same vendor. They can pre-coordinate that and it's kind of not a problem. As soon as an agent has a mediator, that mediator can provide an endpoint for use that agent can hand out to new connections. We're trying to promote the use case where, particularly for open source demos, et cetera, where you can have an agent, and Ozma is the one that I've been working with, but this also applies to other things. You have an agent that you want to connect to a cloud agent, and they can communicate enough to support, via return route, et cetera, to coordinate that cloud agent's role as a mediator for that agent. That's what the route coordination protocol is for. But when you first make that initial connection and you do the connections protocol or the DID exchange protocol, you have the need to pass a URI. And I've run into some differences between how the various libraries do it between ACAPI and the .NET agent framework for Aries. And one of them, ACAPI, will allow an empty string for the URI, which I used when I was building the toolbox. The .NET one doesn't. It requires a valid URI. And so we had a conversation about what to actually put in there. And I actually did some reading about what constitutes a valid URI and proposed this string. It turns out that you don't have to have an authority. That's the whack-whack. So the whack-whack designates an authority, but you don't have to. And there's a couple of examples that don't. But this would be a valid URI that could indicate that there isn't an endpoint you can send something to. And so the implication there is that you'll need to hold on to the message until they call in to make an inbound connection that you can send that message back out over. Return route is one of them. There's also like a pickup protocol that we've discussed, and that's related. But the core issue is, what should we actually put in there? This only really makes sense in the sense of peer DIDs, because you wouldn't stick this in a public DID document that says, "Hey, here's no endpoint," or "Here's an endpoint you can't use." But it is highly relevant in the case of a peer endpoint if we desire the behavior that an agent can talk to another agent even if it does not itself have an inbound endpoint, which is the need for both mobile agents without a mediator or desktop tools like the toolbox. You know, it doesn't have an external thing, you know, and it would be nice if it didn't need to rely on an external service to provide it, you know, a routable URI for that purpose. We could if we had to, but I think it's a good idea that we allow this case where it doesn't. The implication, though, is that this is relatively rare and would only really need to be supported by agents capable of being a mediator or capable of maintaining just that direct connection, say between a desktop, you know, agent like the toolbox and the agent itself. And so we kind of got to the point where we had some questions. In the framework Go, you know, they're using routing endpoint, which is similar. It's more or less an equivalent string, just as a marker. And I don't know that it matters what we use, but I think it's worthwhile trying to pick something that that we all use consistently to mean that. The idea then is that I would find the right RFCs to update or a new RFC to write that documented this particular case and the string and the implications of using it. Any comments or thoughts?
So what you're saying is that there is a transport called the hold transport. Am I correct?
Yes, that's kind of what I'm implying here. Hold was the word I came up with when I was trying to name things, because that's easy, indicating that you needed to, like, the message was there and I would come pick it up from you somehow.
Or queue?
Queue is equivalent in my brain. I mean, it might be better. But yes, that's kind of what I mean.
So I think what Stephen Curran mentioned was being used, I've now thought about this a little bit more carefully, I think could also be a valid thing, but I think it means something different. If you explicitly declare an endpoint to be empty, I think what you're saying is hold messages and I'll talk to you about it later. Rather, you're saying, I'm sorry, you just simply can't send to me at all. This is a one-way connection. On the other hand, what you're saying is, no, this is a two-way connection. If you will go to the trouble of holding my messages, I'll show up eventually and get them, right?
Yes. And it's possible that an agent does not support this intentionally, meaning they don't support these types of features and simply cannot maintain connections with another agent that doesn't have a routable endpoint. I can think of several resource-based reasons why you might want to do that. You might have an agent that's not really capable, that doesn't have the memory to really store any messages at all, in the case of a very small one. Or you could, or you might have political reasons why holding a message is a really bad idea, right? Or some legal requirement issue. And so it's not required that every agent support this, but it is required if you want to talk to an agent without an endpoint, like a desktop utility or a mobile app and services mediator, that you would support this. I like the distinction, though, that you're drawing, though, is that there's a difference between you can't ever send me a message, and if you send me a message and just hold on to it, I'll show up and pick it up.
Yeah, I think both of those semantics are independently worthwhile to be able to express. So when I first was engaged in this ticket, I was thinking we only needed one, but now I'm just kind of articulating that I'm seeing both, and they're both reasonable. I kind of like the word queue instead of the word hold, and I'll tell you why. When I saw your URL transport/hold, I interpreted it differently. I thought that what you were saying is the transport is a decision that's on hold, not the transport is you hold the message. So if you say transport/queue, I think it's clearer that you're saying the transport is you queue the messages for me.
The other option that I had thought about was pickup instead of hold.
That would work too. That's clearer. Either of those, either queue or pickup is better than hold, I think.
I think Q may unintentionally imply that they're supposed to give it to some sort of message queue, like RabbitMQ or something.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Pickup avoids that.
Really what you're saying is you're saying that the agent is supposed to be providing a message queue for you. That's really what it's doing.
It is. It totally is, right? But it has this weird, like, possible misunderstanding of the fact that I'm supposed to send it out via some message queue.
Yeah, yeah.
So go ahead.
Oh, this is Steve McCown. A good way to think of this is the request response paradigm. We see that in ZMQ. And that's essentially what you're saying is hold everything in an outbound queue until I connect and pick it up. But it's the request response paradigm. It's a common one. It's a good one.
Yes. Paul also mentioned escrow. But that sort of implies a third party that I'm not sure is always true. Yes. Okay. So the main goals, I think we should end up with a string. I argued that we should end up with a string instead of an empty string simply because an empty string is hard to Google. But if you run across something, right, then you can search for that and find some answer of what it actually implies, which is a little bit easier. Okay.
Come on, Sam. If your Google skills aren't good enough to find an empty string,
well,
you just gotta get better at it.
Google's indexed trillions and trillions of empty strings. I know it. I just can't prove it.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah, my Google foo is not that good. Well, it's funny. I mean, you laugh, but Go, the language Go, turned out to be a problem. And now everyone uses Golang as the tag because that's a Googleable thing. You can't Google Go and get anything useful, right? It's funny, though, if I pull up a browser and type in Python and I've logged in, they know from my search history that I'm much more likely to be interested in the language than the snake. But if you go to an anonymous window and I type Python, you tend to get a mix of both. Because you might be interested in Snake or the programming language, which is really interesting. So I like moving that to pickup, and I'm thinking the same RFC or wherever I stick this, Daniel, could also indicate. What do you think about none to indicate that like there is none? This would be an alternative to the if we talked about having two.
I'm not exuding enthusiasm just because we're inventing like special case strings here, and the more of them we invent, the less comfortable I get. But yeah, that's probably good.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like them either, but the same Googleable thing does actually kind of work. And this is a special case because it's a valid URI, but if you try and actually like look up a transport for this, you're not going to find it. Okay, I'm going to leave that comment. Just take a note for myself.
We're kind of inventing new terminology. Pickup is going to need some description for people coming along later. What if we use something more common like outbox? Or queue was a good one that we talked about a few minutes ago. But pickup seems to be kind of a new term, and we'd have to set the context rather than using a more common term.
I could be happy with outbox.
I think that outbox and pickup are both likely to need an explanation on what this actually means as a URI. So I think you're correct that we need an explanation. I'm not sure that we're going to find a term that avoids the need for an explanation given the context. We're more or less saying this is a URI that you can never use. Now, URIs are not necessarily places you can send stuff to, right? URIs can be names of other sort of static resources, et cetera. So we're not totally outside the bounds of what a URI can do. But most of us as developers, if I'm giving you an endpoint in the form of a URI, and it says something like, don't call me, I'll call you, then it's gonna need some explanation.
It's interesting that we're calling it a URI, not a URL. And we're using it correctly. It's an identifier, but it's not a locator. You can't get there. But you can know what it means. That's what the identification function is.
Right. Well, and URIs allow us to do things like this. You can't do that with a URL. It's too specific.
I'm sorry, Sam. What was that you can't do with the you were saying?
With you can't declare a URL that doesn't go anywhere. I mean, you can. Yeah, that's a URI. So using URIs allows both the cases of what we're proposing here and a URL in the case of HTTPS or WebSockets or something.
Yes. The one thing, it's possible you could get the URI police out there asking if DIDCOM is a registered scheme with IANA.
Well, I'm proposing that we might need to. And that's actually been proposed in other RFCs kind of as well. I'm not the first one there.
Which is fine.
Right. So we're sort of toying with the idea of is it worth using this and should we go to IANA to register it is kind of the deal.
If we went to IANA to register it, would that mean it needs the whack whack?
No. Nope. What I'm unclear on is if a URI format, you know, if we register DIDCOM, do we have to say this one uses a whack whack or does it not? Or does the same designator allow for both an authority or a non-authority use?
Well, bottom line is you can only get it registered with IANA if you write a spec for the DIDCOM scheme. And when you write the spec for the scheme, you say what it means. Yeah,
so,
something like that.
So here's the syntax diagram, right? And it turns out the whole whack whack thing is optional. If you use whack whack, you have to have a host. And you can have a user info if you want to, and you can optionally have a port. So I went to just do the path thing. And there's a handful of examples here. So here's a URI, of course, for an email address, but that doesn't have an authority. This is the thing that actually has an authority. That's for LDAP, right? Here's the authority for the, you know, with a host. So here's another example of a URI that points to a more of a name than a locator, right? The URN is a URI thing.
I was just going to say that the closest thing to what you're doing is URNs. And in fact, it's possible IANA could come back and say, well, you should just make it a URN scheme, which means putting URN colon in front of it. But
we could. You're right. So it would be URN, DIDCOM, don't call me, I'll call you. but yes. Okay. I lost my issue. I have issues. Where is it? So what do we want to do about this? Given that I will find it eventually. Where'd I go? There we are. Okay. What do we want to do? Do we want to pick? I don't feel like it. I feel like it matters and I feel like it doesn't matter, but I'd like to sort of pick something so that we can get support for it in the various libraries and move along.
I don't know. This looks fine to me.
You can have a vote if you want with raised hands.
Q is the one that has been proposed the most. does anyone object to Q? I was the only one that voiced an objection. Does anyone object to using Q?
Jean-Luc Picard really objected.
Perfect.
I must have missed that episode.
I was waiting for that joke.
Drummond, it was a whole series, not an episode.
I think I missed the whole series.
Let's do Q then. Is anyone opposed to Q? Okay, so let it be written. Let's use this, and then I'll figure out the right place to write this into something so that I can close this issue and the effect can be recorded. But that's good. Okay, that's what I was hoping to move past. And that can be the end of that topic. Next on the schedule was DidExchange. We also had namestates and protocols, Daniel. If we start talking about DidExchange, we're not going to get to your topic. Do you want to do yours first, or are you content for it to happen next week?
Mine is not super urgent. I'd love to do it, but I think we should decide based on whether the other one is urgent. It sounded like a lot of people are feeling restless about the DID exchange, so I don't mind if we do that one instead. Whatever the will of the people is.
I detect some urgency here too. Let's do yours next week then. Does anyone object with that? Okay. So here's the DID exchange protocol. This is takes inspiration from the connections protocol, but is designed to fix a variety of things. And I've created a list of things that we have talked about fixing about it. One of them is the extraction of the an invitation protocol. What that practically means is that this step zero, the invitation to exchange, would actually be split into a protocol by itself. The reason that's useful is because we're about to enter a land where when you create this invitation is often stuck in something like a QR code. It's passed out of band. And you don't know, because you're the first one to share anything, you don't know what they support. So you don't know if they support DID exchange or connections protocol or whatever the next fancy thing that we come up with is. The point about extracting the invitations protocol is it still is an invitation to connect, but you, along with the other relevant information, you could specify which of the resulting protocols you support, and then the recipient can, as long as they match up with one of those, can then execute that protocol with the source material passed along in the invitation protocol. And that gives us a little bit of future proofness, given that we're going to be encoding these things in QR codes and we don't know exactly. The alternative to this looks a lot like, hey, if your agent supports DID exchange, do this. If they support connections, do that, which is an awful user experience. Thoughts on extracting?
Potentially, we can use that same mechanism for things like the ephemeral challenge that we've already started using, and other things which actually don't result in a connection, but we do want to result in a response. So
though I'm worried about trying to solve all problems with the invitation protocol, it seems to me that trying to have a message you can stick into, have a standard way of taking a message and sticking it into a QR code, means that we can stick a variety of messages into a QR code, and we can attempt to solve that problem. Does that make sense?
I think by definition, if you're sticking it into a QR code, you're essentially saying, I don't have a connection to pass this on. I don't have a secure way of sending this to you, so I need to give it to you some other way. So it's an out of band, and that to me is the common trait that we're trying to build on. Invitation is one, ephemeral challenge is another, and I think there are others.
Correct. What I'm saying is I don't believe the invitation protocol needs to solve the ephemeral challenge protocols simultaneously within itself. It's a sibling.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. We need an out of band message that could be used for transporting multiple things, one of which is an invitation, one of which is ephemeral, and possibly others.
Yes. And we've already talked about, we already have a deep linking RFC that talks about how to pass out of band messages, right? It includes QR codes, but has some more details there. So, okay. So the extraction of the invitation protocol feels like something we should do. It needs an RFC that says here's what it is and why. Right. And as soon as that's written, the DID exchange RFC can say, if you want a step zero, use the invitation protocol. And then that works. The invitation protocol can also say you can jump into the connections protocol at this step with this information, or a future one. Right. I mean, it solves that problem nicely. Okay. So the vote on this is yes. Is there anyone who doesn't like the idea of an invitation protocol?
At the risk of beating a dead horse here, I think it makes it more difficult to write a security proof if you abstract this.
I don't know that I know enough about security proofs to say anything intelligent about that.
Okay. For what it's worth, I wholeheartedly hear what you're saying, and I think there's a lot of benefit to it. We're just going to have to... I really don't know how to solve the problem, because like with security proofs, this is the part that actually causes everything else to break is if we abstract this invitation layer, whether or not it's properly transported over a trusted out-of-band communication channel is whether or not your the rest of your DIDCOM connection is secure or not.
By definition, it's not. I mean, that is the point. You don't have a way to do it. You use the best you have. So I don't really understand that comment because by definition, you don't have a channel to use.
Well, what Kyle's getting at is that the nature of how this works will result has implications on the security of the resulting channel. And so by separating...
I get that. But I don't see how this separating this out makes any difference to that.
I actually think, Kyle, my counterpoint is it could actually make it easier, given the fact that we're not sure, you know, we're studying the nature of what you're passing over this separately, and it could help focus the security evaluation on just what you're passing that and the implications for other protocols rather than making it more complicated.
Maybe. Stephen asked one thing, and the thing I wanted to jump in on with that was I think where it makes it more complicated, what you're saying is true. It doesn't change things. It makes it more complicated in the sense that the evaluation needs to be done on both the invitation and the exchange. You can't just do either or. The reason I say the security falls on the invitation is because that's where the implications actually come into play. But if you also screw up DID exchange, then you could screw up your security proofs as well. But we just have actually gotten that right, so we don't need to worry about that as much. But in a practical sense, when you're auditing it, you still need to account for it.
Another way to say this really is, what we're doing is we're taking something very similar to a Diffie-Hellman, and we're taking one step out of the Diffie-Hellman. And I think what Kyle's claiming is if you take that step out of the Diffie-Hellman and analyze either the first half or the second half in isolation, you don't get a correct view of the resulting security. You have to analyze the steps together.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, I agree with that.
Now, with that in mind, the readability definitely comes into play because I think, there's a lot of benefit, especially around like ephemeral connection and ephemeral messaging that stands to benefit quite a bit from separating this out. So that's why, I'm raising my hands and saying absolutely no. What I'm trying to say is, can we be more thoughtful on how we want to handle that? To make it easier for somebody to come in and security audit, whether that just be like a addendum at the bottom that says this is tied directly to DID exchange, and to properly audit the security, both should be accounted for, or I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
Okay.
We do have we have another vote from Troy in the comments that he likes it being extracted. So I think we voted to do this, and we need to just make a comment that the security needs to be evaluated in concert with the other protocols it's being used with.
Okay, that works for me.
Is anyone itching to write the invitation protocol? I think it's a connection invitation protocol. Invitation is a little bit vague.
I don't think it is a connection invitation. It's a protocol that you could use to invite people to do something like pay you some money or engage in any kind of interaction. And the connection, it's to start a workflow, and connection might be the only workflow you do, or connection might be incidental to the real one you're trying to accomplish.
This is what I was trying to get at earlier. Maybe I didn't say this out loud, was that I wonder how generic this process is. Is it, and you're describing something that could be quite generic, meaning it could start any workflow, and this simply contains the information needed to bootstrap it, meaning the connection information, how to securely send a message to begin that process. So sure, let's call it an invitation then. Is anyone itching to take the first stab at the invitation protocol? Drummond came off mute. I think that means he volunteered. I'm kidding.
Oh, you're good, Sam.
I second that.
Oh, you, second Drummond. Boy, that's not fair. And I'm starting to wonder why no one unmutes in these calls. Is because they don't want to get volunteered for stuff. I could do this. I don't know when I'll be able to get to this. I'll have to look at the other things that I'm currently working on and see.
I would volunteer, except it's going to be several weeks out. If we don't care about several weeks out, you can put my name by it too. One or the other.
Okay. Well, I put my name here, and we'll see what we get to. So, incidentally, the service decorator and the use of inline key representations needs to be part of the new invitation protocol. The thing that I wanted to get. We talked about inline key representations, and there was a general consensus, I believe, to use the did key format. Is that correct?
My understanding of a conversation that was had at the Agent Connect-a-thon was we would use did key format for the time being, but tell people that this was a temporary measure. I was okay with it if we told them that. I wasn't okay with it as a good long-term solution, but I think there was some other people who thought that was a long-term solution.
I had thought the resolution was a long-term solution, and now you're making it very clear that that might not be a good one.
The reason
why there's people that think it is a long-term solution. So there's definitely difference of opinion on that.
Yeah. So, Tobias, I think, is Tobias not online?
I don't see him
today. No, it's actually a public holiday today.
Okay. Well, so I think Tobias is the kind of the poster child for people who like that as a long-term solution. And I'm the poster child for somebody who doesn't. I was willing to go as far as we could do it for now because there doesn't seem to be something better, but I didn't like the idea that what you were conveying was a did, but what you really were trying to convey was a key. Tobias was arguing, no, what you really want to convey is a did anyway, and I don't agree with him. So we can go ahead. I wasn't trying to stop people from making progress. I have some pretty strong dissonance. It feels like we're lying to people about what we're really doing here. And we're also lying to ourselves. So
I think where the, I remember I was chatting with him about this and I found the elegant way to explain why this made sense. And now I can't remember it. So I'll have to remember it and then I'll message you, Daniel, but I'm becoming more and more convinced of the thinking behind it, particularly because of the perspective aspect of it.
Hey, Kyle, I'm interested in your thoughts as well, if you can share them with me, with George.
Yeah, yeah. I better yet, I should probably just do a topic on it once I can remember it. I'll just do a presentation.
Awesome.
But essentially, where I think it goes is because you're managing, because they're keys that you receive, there is no resolution aspect that comes into it, at which point it's essentially just an identifier for your own referential lookup, similar to how kids work in JWEs. Now, if somebody sends that to you incorrectly, that's their own fault. And that's where I think the confusion has come into play, is we're wondering, can we actually fix somebody else sending me something incorrectly? And the thinking behind that is around, you know, the usage of just putting the actual cryptographic keys in there such that they're self-certifying identifiers, in this case, DID key is a self-certifying identifier.
Identifier. You don't need an identifier. You just need all the metadata that you want to associate with an identifier. Anyway, we shouldn't go deep on this because it'll take us
forever. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so as the temporary solution, the service decorator information actually needs to be in the invitation protocol, right? That's how that actually works. So whoever gets to there is going to need to include that, and it sounds like we should include a note about this being a temporary solution, and then as that's written up, we can make sure that we agree and debate the finer points of that.
There's actually, I think there's a line in the DID key. Never mind.
Okay. So 268, the deep linking RFC, this was written after the last IW, and it describes how to how to create a URL that does this, and how to actually get there from a URI perspective. And so this talks about how to do that. It doesn't, now that I'm looking at it, it doesn't actually say much about QR codes, although the implication is that you can encode this into a QR code as well. And so it needs to reference this simply so that we don't have the information in two places. And the idea then is that if you actually have a mobile app already installed and you just scan the QR code itself from a QR code scanner, whatever else, then it can actually automatically resolve right to the service and so that an agent ends up picking it up. Or you can hit scan within an agent. Neither one will actually work. It needs to reference probably better than use. Okay. So that's just a note really. And then it also relates to the invitation protocol. It looks like a bunch of the controversial stuff is actually moving up there. The other note that I have, these last two are related, is that Daniel, you brought this up. We need to pass DID docs as attachments and then stick the signatures on the attachments. And one of the reasons why we need to stick them as attachments is because the encoding of the attachment ends up becoming important for linking stuff in the peer DID protocol. Did I say that right?
Yes.
So we need to change the format of how that's actually done, and that would happen in the DID exchange RFC itself because of the advantage that provides. So all of these others basically link up into the invitation protocol. I'm actually going to indent these so that we make that clear. This last piece is a change to how that's done. This could be a separate volunteer item if someone wanted to volunteer for this piece. No one's volunteering, Daniel. It might be either you or me, depending on who gets to it first. But that's the other piece that needs to be corrected before we before the DID exchange protocol, I believe, is really ready for prime time. Thoughts by anybody? Is there anything I'm missing? I think if we get these two things laid out, I think that anything that is missing will stick out, but anything that we know before then would be useful.
Go ahead.
I just wondered, do we think that we're handling the method of reusing a connection? Are we going to be covered in these things, or should we mark that as a make sure that once these two things are done, we're covered in that?
So reuse of connections is a good one. We have a way to do it as long as you start with a public DID, which actually covers a lot of use cases, but I don't believe it covers them all.
Nope, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think it covers them all.
And there's it covers nicely a case where you're connected to an institution. It doesn't it does nothing about peer connections.
But it doesn't tell you how the institution should recognize that, oh, this connection, this message that I just got from some random thing is tied to the invitation that I provided. That's the point that I don't find.
We if this is a generic invitation protocol, it's a bootstrapping message.
Yeah.
We may be able to solve that problem by having the invitation protocol.
Okay. So that's the only thing I'd like to call out is a mention of that, either in the separate invitation protocol or in the or mentioned in the exchange, one or the other. But yeah, let's be explicit about we want to make sure we cover that.
Right. Okay. I think we can solve it with the invitation protocol, but we may not.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep.
Okay. Okay. So let's proceed on that. And we're about out of time. Daniel, you're on next week for the namespaces and co-protocols.
Yeah. Can I give a 30-second teaser on that?
You can.
The whole invitation phenomenon that we were just talking about, where you could start an arbitrary workflow, would presuppose that you engage in connection if needed, and then you go on to something else. Co-protocols is a name for the phenomenon of relating one workflow with another. And sometimes you do that by having one be a subset of the other or like a sub-protocol, but other times they're a little bit more gnarly in their relationship. And so that's part of what I want to talk about.
Okay. Awesome. Any other topics that we ought to be discussing next week?
In the Aries framework, in the Aries Working Group A call, we're going to do a deep dive into the Aries Go framework. So anybody who wants to join that can join a few hours earlier, time zone wise.
Okay, Aries Go next Wednesday morning call. Thank you, Richard, for the plug.
Sam, can I put a discussion on the chained credentials RFC? Can we talk about that in one of these? It's number 104. I know that Jan Lindquist wanted to talk about it as well, just to make sure that we're aligned outside of this group as well.
Do you want me to put his name on it or your name?
Probably his. He's more of a consent guy.
Okay. I should spell credentials right. Okay. I've got that on the list for next week as well.
Okay, thanks.
Perfect. We're out of time. Thanks, folks, for coming, and appreciate your input. And we will see you online and on the call next week.
Cool.
Cool. Thanks, everybody.
Good stuff. Thanks, all.
Bye.